This is Radio 314 on the Red Ice Radio Network.
Welcome, new and familiar listeners. This is Lana joining you for the next hour. My guest today is Matt Flavel, who is on the board of directors of the Ossetru Folk Assembly. We're going to hear all about Ossetru. Where does it come from? What are the tenets? And why so many European folk today are attracted to it? Ossetru is about roots, connection, and coming home. It's an expression of the native pre-Christian spirituality of Europe. No, it's not role-playing, playing dress-up, or something witchy feminist liberals practice. And we'll talk about this as the AFA has been under fire for being a discriminatory organization. Matt Flavel, up next. Matt Flavel, welcome to the program.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Yeah, I had the pleasure of meeting you and your lovely wife at an Ostera celebration, and you were leading a great blut, so I had a lot of fun at that celebration.
Well, I'm glad you enjoyed it. We really liked having you guys there. That was really neat. A lot of our people have, you know, been big fans for a long time.
Yeah, I was surprised by that. That was fun. I felt like welcomed right away, and so many people knew the show, and it was very warm. I really enjoyed it. I thought that today we'd, you know, start with some of the basics, because people always ask me, what is Ossetru? What is it? So maybe we can talk about that and then talk about some of the other recent attacks that are going on towards AFA. But, so tell us,
sure.
What does Ossetru mean? I think that's a really good place to start.
Well, Ossetru is it's an Icelandic word. It's kind of an old Norse word that means troth or loyalty to the Aesir. So it basically means loyalty to the old gods of Europe.
Okay, and then when did it really start? I know it's hard to say that.
Well, it's our belief that it started with the dawn of our people way back, you know, as soon as our people became identified as a group. But more recently, it kind of got a restart back in the early 70s. And it was interesting because it got a simultaneous reboot unbeknownst to one another, both in Iceland and in England, and then in the United States, and all within about 3 years of each other back in the early 70s.
I guess an easy way to explain it would probably be it's an expression of the native, you know, pre-Christian spirituality of Europe. I know people are attracted to the Abrahamic religions because I think humans, we have a spiritual need to fill. People want community, they want fellowship, they want answers to the big questions, you know. Why is the religion of our ancestors best for us, in your view?
Well, I mean, I guess let me answer that in two ways. I'll tell you a little bit about my coming to Ossetru and what my thought process was, because I think it's relevant to this. I was a very spiritual person growing up, and I got into, you know, my early adulthood, and I was really spiritual, but I wasn't raised with a lot of religion. And my aunt and their family were Jehovah's Witnesses. And so I got into that for a little bit because I figured, you know, what options do I have? If you're going to be religious, there's Christianity. And, you know, I'm not Jewish. I'm not a Muslim. So there's Christianity. That's kind of all that I thought I had. So I tried to do that really hard and found out that it was progressively more and more trying to beat a square peg into a round hole. And it just wasn't good. I examined the biblical God, and I went through and I read my Bible several times, and I finally decided that if this is what there is, then the God of the Bible is not someone I want to associate with and not something I want to be a part of. By human standards, they would be a bad person, and I couldn't be part of that. And so then I broke with Christianity, and I found myself still very spiritual. And so it occurred to me, you know, what did our people have before Christianity? Because, you know, I was a student of history, and I appreciated those things. So I tried to think, what did we have before that? And that got me thinking, got me looking, and soon enough I found the AFA, and I found, you know, I wasn't the only person who thought like that, and that was a really good feeling.
Yeah, it's amazing that our parents and our grandparents, a lot of them don't even know, but it's up to people like us to kind of do the research and kind of bring it back to life. Yeah, when I think about, you know, Ossetru and paganism, I think it was started by our own people, right? Not just some strangers in the Middle East that we don't really have much in common with, right?
Well, exactly. You asked, you know, why this is the best for our people. And it's because it's native to our people. It's not an add-on. It springs from the very folk soul, the root of our people. The gods of Ossetru are the gods of our blood, of our heritage. They reflect our people and our unique way of dealing with the world. The founder of the AFA, Steve McNallan, talks about that when he talks about metagenetics. And it's the idea that your spiritual outlook and your your spirituality is passed on genetically, much like your other traits are passed on.
So what do you think about the claim, you know, that our ancestors, they were just simple-minded savages, you know, they just ate meat and drank mead, they were just uncivilized. We always hear that when people think of pagans or Vikings. What do you think when you hear this?
Well, one of the things that I'd like to clear up that's different from the AFA and, you know, maybe some other groups that claim to be doing the same thing, we're not Viking reenactors. you know, the Vikings did a lot of cool stuff. I'm not going to try to tell you they didn't. The Vikings are neat. I like them. Everybody likes Vikings. But in the same way that gangster rappers all want to wear Jesus pieces and have their blinged out crosses, they're not an example of the Christian faith. I don't think that Viking marauders are the prime example of thousands of years of European spirituality. We have a spiritual tradition that was very rich, and it dates back, you know, into Neolithic times, and to isolate it to one very, very small expression at a time where we happen to have just gotten literacy is kind of misleading.
Yeah, I think too, the Vikings and the various Germanic tribes, they were the source of some of our, you know, finest civilized traditions, if you will. I mean, trial by jury, parliaments, common law, right to bear arms, rights of women, right? Actually, I think the word law even comes from the Norse language. So, I mean, there's not just simpletons that didn't bring anything and just drank and ate. It's ridiculous.
No, they had a complex society, and that society that's got roots back, you know, in the Aryan migration period. They've got a really proud spirituality with a lot of really important traditions. The runic tradition was a really very well-developed tradition. Absolutely a profound thing. It certainly wasn't the simple picture that we get with it.
Yeah, it's funny that you mentioned kind of the role-playing or Viking reenactments. A lot of times when we mention paganism, a lot of people just seem to think, oh, that's just LARPing, right? Live action role playing, like you're doing dress up or D&D and doing silly rituals. So what do you say to that?
Well, you know what? Unfortunately, for a lot of folks, as became obvious to me this week, it is about that. And I want to make a very clear separation between the AFA and the folks that's what they do. Pagan tends to be a category that's, you know, synonymous with other. And if you don't fit in with any of the other religions, you all get lumped in this big, you know, this big melting pot coalition of paganism. And we don't want any part of that. A lot of people do that, but it's not what we do. It's a modern religion. It's the religion of our people. It grows with our people. It develops with our people. And as always, it faces the challenges that our people face and is relevant to those challenges.
Exactly. We're not talking about Wiccan witches or these so-called, you know, people practicing white magic or this modern day kind of witchy stuff, which attracts a lot of liberal feminists. You know, it really bothers me that people, when they think paganism, they think of these witchy liberal feminist types. And it seems like they've kind of hijacked some of these fun rituals.
Well, they really have. And, you know, I don't want to speak to every single Wiccan out there. I'm sure that there are some people that do some fairly authentic spiritual practices under that umbrella. But by and large, you're right. There's this big milieu of hyper-liberal paganism that starts out with some kind of form of magic and ritual, but ends up just being an engine for social justice warriors and for very extreme agendas.
Yeah, well, recently, I think the AFA was under fire for being racist, sexist, homophobic, discriminatory, blah, blah. So tell us what happened recently.
Okay, well, the AFA and myself in specific stand accused of all manner of evils, from racism and bigotry and intolerance and homophobia and this phobia and that phobia. I come to find out the AFA, I guess, is scared of a whole lot of things I didn't think that I was afraid of. But because I had the audacity to make this post, so I posted, "Today we are bombarded with confusion and messages contrary to the values of our ancestors and our folk. The AFA would like to make it clear that we believe gender is not a social construct. It is a beautiful gift from the holy powers and from our ancestors. The AFA celebrates our feminine ladies, our masculine gentlemen, and above all, our beautiful white children. The children of our folk are our shining future and the legacy of all those men and women of our people back to the beginning. Hail the AFA families, now and always."
Uh-oh, and then what happens?
Uh-oh. Uh-oh is right. It exploded, and where it reached a shocking number of people. As of right now, I've got 70,519 people reached. So we have, you know, these are numbers that we've never seen before with the posts on our website. And unfortunately, a lot of the early shares were to really extreme social justice warrior, crazy groups of people. And so we got floods of people we'd never heard from, never wanted to hear from, freaking out. And very few of them had anything productive to say or any honest disagreement. We had a lot of threats, a lot of name calling, and a whole lot of just hate and vitriol, because I had the audacity to say what I just told you guys. I mentioned that I appreciate traditional genders and that the AFA likes beautiful white children. That drove certain people absolutely crazy.
I mean, it's outrageous. It would never be an issue with non-whites gathering for their native religion, only when it's these European people who are preserving and wanting to honor their heritage and have a sense of identity. And it's a problem. You know, no one tells these tribes deep in, you know, South America that they need to add diversity and include everyone. I mean, really, I mean, when did it become a heathen sin to be folkish? When did this happen?
Relatively recently, honestly. I certainly don't think that was the case with our ancestors. And at the founding of Auschwitz in the United States, that was never a case. It was always a folkish thing. It wasn't until so much, much later that we started getting these, what we call universalist Auschwitz people, universalist heathen people. And then that kind of just became, like I said earlier, it got mixed in the pot of this generic other paganism that really doesn't have a lot of form and is fairly amorphous and seems to have coalesced around self-loathing and pushing a hyper-liberal agenda.
I mean, doesn't folkish mean it means a tribe, ethnic or a racial group, a nation? It's all about your ancestors, and that means blood and race, right? I mean, that's the very definition of it. It is exclusive. It's not for everyone.
It does, and there's a certain number of people that became okay with that on some level, but you know, I'm having to become familiar with this whole new liberal lexicon now, but I guess that using the word white to identify, to self-identify or to identify our people it triggers some folks.
I mean, this is ridiculous. I mean, we don't owe any kind of explanation for this. We just have to charge forward. But what I notice, isn't it mostly white people that are attacking you over this?
Oh, yeah. I'm unaware of any other races of people that are speaking out against this. But yes, self-loathing other white people are the ones that are taking the biggest issue with our stance.
To tell them, okay, well, why don't you go join an African or Asian native religion and see if they welcome you with open arms, right?
Yeah, apparently that argument has very little weight with them. One of the other things that made them very angry is we didn't allow you know, horrible comments on our page. We decided our page wasn't a platform for them to spew hatred, and so we didn't let their comments be viewed. And that incensed them. How dare we not give them, you know, free space to post hatred and threats about us?
That's right. It's one-way free speech. When we say the truth, it's hate speech, but then they just have the right to be hateful as much as they want all over our platforms.
It's funny because I had literally had people advocating violence and death to me and to our people in the same statement of because of our hate speech. because of our hate and intolerance, they were going to do this violence to us. So
it's amazing how they can't see, like, what has gone on in their head. They just can't see. I think it's just so much of this Marxist anti-white programming. What do you think?
Well, absolutely. I think we've been bombarded with that. And that's one of the reasons that I posted what I posted, is I wanted to be very clear. Some people are so conditioned that they don't get it, and I don't know why, but these things, you know, have this guttural reaction that they need to flee from or whatever. I'm very proud of who I am, and I'm very proud of my people, and the Auschwitz Folk Assembly is being proud of being a proud white organization for the advancement of our people.
I mean, worst case scenario, what do these people think is going to happen? You almost want to ask them, what do you think is going to happen? I mean, what do they honestly, in their demented view of us, think that we're going to do at these meetings?
Have the audacity to have a different opinion than me. And I think that in and of itself is something that's a step too far for them to be able to stomach, unfortunately.
It's almost like, too, they think that we're going to be plotting some kind of genocide of other people or something there. You know, uh-oh, too many white people getting together. It's going to mean that they're plotting some kind of conquest, right?
Well, maybe, but I've heard in their very responses to my posts, suggestions that they were going to breed us out and that in a generation there wouldn't be any more white people. And their advocacy of genocide seems to be to the forefront. I've been to a lot of AFA events and never have we discussed genociding any other groups of people.
That is correct. That is correct. Wow. Well, the other thing is our ancestors, they didn't talk about trans rights or multiculturalism or racism, did they?
No, of course not. Of course not. Worrying about those, you know, those petty things is beneath them. They had other things to do.
So do you think now that you're going to get kind of maybe some of these lefty types infiltrating some of your gatherings to spy and keep an eye on you guys?
I doubt it. One thing that we're kind of fortunate about is these other groups of people seem to be fairly dysfunctional and unable to really come out of the various basements and things and show up and get things accomplished. One of the suggestions by our supporters in response to this has been, hey, if you guys don't like it, how about you guys go do your own thing? How about you guys, you know, get together with groups that support the things that you believe in and things you want to do instead of spending your time complaining. But unfortunately, I guess that's more fun or takes a little bit more effort or is beyond their capabilities. So,
I mean, what would make them happen in their view to be acceptable in their eyes? Would it mean that you would have to be multicultural and have trannies and gay families? And what is it that they want?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that, you know, some of these people, and certainly not everybody who disagrees with me, there's people that disagree with us, they're probably very well-meaning people. But the really vicious ones that made such a stink, I think so. I think anything short of complete and total giving up and praising of their strange lifestyles and their strange choices, anything short of that's unacceptable. I think not only do they want us to accept them, but I think they want us to praise them and champion their extreme stances and extreme behaviors. And you know, I think that some of them, literally from what they've said to me, will only be happy when our race is no longer a distinguishable group of people. And that's unacceptable.
Yeah, it's interesting how, I mean, what we're talking about, this religion, it's in touch with nature and natural cycles, right? Very earthy. So then how is someone who does shots to change their sexuality, what would they relate to this religion for then? It's the complete opposite of what they are.
Well, that's a fine question. I often wonder that. And one of the reasons I want to make a clear distinction between us and this greater pagan community is that's just the thing. You get people that, for whatever reason, and I don't mean this for every other pagan out there doing different things. This isn't a sweeping statement. This is specifically to the people that I've heard attack us in the past week. They don't fit in a lot of places. I think quite often they suffer from some rather severe mental illness problems that I don't mean to make light of. I think those are probably very big problems in those people's lives. They suffer from a lot of these things to where life just doesn't work out for them. And so they get pushed to a fringe and they get marginalized. And unfortunately, that fringe tends to coalesce in, you know, these alternative fringe things, which that greater pagan community seems to be a net that scoops those people up.
Yeah, exactly. And then you have on the extreme opposite, there's probably some gay people that are like, yeah, the family unit, that is the healthy way. I respect what you guys are doing, right? Maybe. Do you see any of that kind of behavior?
Oh, absolutely I do. And I think that, you know, I think that you guys see that in the alt-right too. You've got people that, you know, just because it's not their lifestyle or what they're doing, they can still see that the healthy families and traditional families are the building block of society. And obviously our ancestors valued them or we wouldn't be here today having this conversation.
Yeah, it's just, what times are we in when just the thought of white couples making white babies is like a cardinal sin, you know? It's like looking at a gas chamber or something when you see a family is like that.
Well, it seems to be the same thing in a lot of these people's heads, and that's unfortunate. You know, looking back, and I've looked back and looked over my statement over and over again, nothing negative said in there at all. There was no slams at any other people, any other communities. It was simply a statement of things that we like and things that we support as an organization. And it's unfortunate that, you know, we can't specify things that we like without that immediately meaning some kind of hate and some vitriol towards anybody else.
Yep. Yeah, it's like they want to police everyone's thoughts, where you can't even do things peacefully, organizing and having your group and minding your own business. You can't even do that. They now even want to go into those places and force you to do what they want. Huh?
Well, the champions of diversity and of tolerance are anything but, and they cannot tolerate you having a different opinion than they have. And that's unfortunate, and it's kind of shocking the level that they will go. I mean, like I say, there's been advocation of violence and of preventing people's rights to have free speech and free exercise of our religious faith, and it's really shocking me that they don't get the disconnect between, you know, tolerance and the way that they're behaving.
So what do you think the future of the AFA would look like if these people got their way?
There would be no future of the AFA if these people got their way. If these people got their way, eventually there'll be no separation. And you already see this in some of the other, like I said, universalist organizations. They devolve. They're not about something that they're positively for. If you read their mission statements, they're increasingly about things that they're against. Whereas the AFA is for the worship of our gods, for the establishment of our religion, for a positive set of values, for, like I mentioned, the things that we believe in. You read theirs and it's, well, we will not tolerate racism, we will not tolerate homophobia, and we will not tolerate transphobia, and we will not, and they just have a list of will nots and do nots. And that's not the way to do anything. You can't define yourself by all the things you're against. You have to define yourself by a positive vision you have for what you're doing going forward. And that's what the AFA always has done and will continue.
Yeah, but you know how it is, too. If you keep telling people what they can't do, they're going to want to do exactly those same things. That's why I think a lot of young kids are going to start rebelling against that. But it tells you how controlling they are when now they want to go in there and police even your spirituality, right?
Oh, absolutely. You are free to do all manner of very strange things that our grandparents' generation would be shocked and mortified by, but you're not free to express your faith if there's any exclusivity to it, assuming that you are, you know, heterosexual or white. Any other groups of people, though, by all means, go ahead and be as exclusive as you want. But I don't know why there's a different set of rules that apply. I find that racist.
Now, do you think that you're going to get some kind of organizations trying to peg the AFA as possibly a hate group?
Oh, I think people try to do that all the time. But, you know, as I've said before, they won't find anywhere where the AFA is talking about the things we hate, because, quite frankly, it's a waste of our time. We have too many good things we're trying to do.
That's right. So let's talk about some of those good things that you do there. I mean, what do you guys celebrate? What kind of events do you hold? What do you do when you get together?
Well, a lot of different things, honestly. We've got, you mentioned earlier that, you know, there's a lot of natural cycles that we celebrate. Kind of the big things we celebrate are the solstices and the equinoxes. But just about every month, there's something that our folks are celebrating. And we've got now five big celebrations as of this year that we do on a national level. The next one's coming up in Minnesota this weekend. We get together, we get groups of families and our folk together to give bloat, which is our big worship service to the gods, to kind of share in an offering with the gods. And then we get together, we share meals, we share activities, we talk about our values, we talk about things we'd like to see progress on moving forward, ways to better ourselves physically, mentally, and spiritually. We also do an event called Sumble at these things, and that's kind of a between people communion ritual of sharing meat as we go around and honor our ancestors and honor the heroes of our folk. We get together those weekends, but there's a whole lot of smaller events that the AFA does. Just about every weekend we have an AFA group in some part of the world or another getting together with their community and celebrating our holy gods and our ancestors.
Yeah, I think anything that we can do to remember our line, our ancient culture, and inspire young children to be interested in their culture is a positive thing. I mean, I saw kids at the gathering that we went to, and kids love the seasonal celebration. It's really fun. It sticks with them. It's going to be a good association growing up with it. But I think Baluta is also, it's a good way to take time to just slow down and remember and honor the change in season and your ancestors, because we just get so busy. So there is kind of that meditative aspect. But then also, it's a good way to come together, I think, with like-minded people and encourage each other, kind of recharge your batteries and be encouraged and have fellowship, because people do need that in these times we're in, right?
Well, our people have always needed that. I run into people that are what we call solitary practitioners, and they're off by themselves trying to do these things. And if that's all they can do in their situation, that's great. And it's great that they're doing that. But you really get the feel for it when you have a community and when you get together as a community to do these things. And it's there's no other feeling like it. You know, we don't have anybody that comes out to our events and then regrets it afterwards. I've never heard that. But I have heard a lot of people come out to our events, and it's life-changing for them. I know that was my case when I went to my first one.
Now, a lot of times people think, oh, you're just worshiping nature, worshiping your ancestors, but it's not really like that. It's about honoring them, right?
Well, yeah, I think, I don't know, words have different meanings to different people. We certainly worship our ancestors, and we worship the gods of our people, but more than that, we try to honor them and respect them. We view our ancestors and even the gods themselves to a degree as, you know, as our ancestors, as our most ancient ancestors. We try to live the values that they inspire in us and have always inspired in our ancestors. And it really roots us in who we are and where we come from. And I think you'll find across the board that any people, when they are proud of themselves, proud of the people that they come from, proud of their identity, they function better in society as a whole, all across the board.
Oh yeah, identity is key. Without identity, you're completely lost. You can never function without having some sense of identity.
Well, and at the risk of going back to the W word, I think that's why people are so offended by the word white, because it is a way for us to specifically identify our people. And that angers a lot of people, but we can't even mention, you know, what race of people we are. That's holding us back from our identity, and that's wrong. That's wrong to do to any people.
Yeah, it's really evil. And also, you can't stop the truth. This is what we're talking about is rooted in biology. It's rooted in what's right in front of our face. It's rooted in nature. I mean, you're not ever going to stop this or change the fact that we're white.
No, and why would you want to? That's the thing. Why would you want to?
So let's talk about some of these basic tenets of Asatru, if you can summarize that.
All right. Well, some of the basic tenets of Asatru, and this is something that most people generally are very accepting of, is the nine noble virtues. And these are values that come to us through, you know, an understanding of our ancestors and the things that were important to them. And there's ways to apply these and live these in our daily lives. First one is courage. Second is truth. Honor, fidelity, discipline, hospitality, self-reliance, industriousness, and perseverance. And, you know, we think by living those values and trying to practice those in our daily lives, we can be good people, we can be noble people, and those are good things to live your life by, and things that certainly were very important to our ancestors and to our people from time immemorial.
Yeah, it's interesting how people think, where would we be without the Ten Commandments? As though our ancestors were just wild people who treated everyone like crap and treated each other awfully. No, they had these values instilled into them and talked about it all the time, right?
Absolutely. A person's reputation and how they behaved was key to our ancestors on how they valued people. There was no blanket system of equality. You were judged by your deeds and by your reputation. And I think that they're very, very noble people. It's one of the things when we talk about, you know, the Aryan tribes of people. That's a Sanskrit word that means noble and implies shining nobility. There's a time where our people were identified by how noble they were.
And then you can flip all the opposites too that they probably despised, and we should learn from that today. Weakness, cowardice, adherence to dogma, all that kind of reminds me of liberalism, actually.
Yeah, absolutely. There was definitely things that they didn't tolerate, and the kind of shenanigans I've seen from our detractors this last week, I think our ancestors have been pretty clear in their disavowing of that kind of behavior.
It's different because back then they could just take it out on the battlefield, right? And just settle the score right there.
Absolutely. And I have no doubt that they would have. It's very strange to me. Oftentimes the biggest detractors and these Viking reenactors that we run into, they're the least likely to want to live an authentic lifestyle that our ancestors would have lived, that required industriousness and required courage on the battlefield and doing all these things. We've replaced that, I guess, with courage on the keyboard.
God, so sad. Well, I see a resurgence of things changing, especially in the pro-white scene and also true, more manly men are coming back and people who are more vocal and unapologetic and who have courage, and that's important. I think that's another reason why our enemies are kind of worried about us getting into our native religions and native history and learning the truth about that, because it awakens something powerful. And awaken something where we're not ashamed. We just charge ahead and don't care what they say.
Well, I think absolutely. I think that's one thing that's kind of irritated them, in this last week, is the response has been overwhelmingly positive and successful as far as people that we would actually want to associate with. We've had support pouring in from all over the place because they felt the need to spread their outcry so far and wide that it kind of advertised the positive things that we were about to a lot of different people. So that's been a really beautiful thing that's come of it. I think our enemies are very incensed that we've been so successful. The Austrian Folk Assembly is by far the most successful Austrian organization, certainly in the United States, and I believe in the world. It's been consistent. It's been a positive change for good. We've got things going. We've got a hop. We have events around the country. Like I said, just about every weekend, we've got AFA members getting out, doing something, meeting other people, and honoring their gods. I think there's a lot of anger because we have been so successful.
Now, you guys are seeing a lot of growth, I hear. Now, are you guys expanding into Europe at all? Is there any networks over there and Australia and New Zealand?
Oh, absolutely. And specifically in Europe, we've got some really, really good people over in Europe. We've got a very good group of folks over in Scandinavia. We got to visit our Denmark folks a number of years ago, and that was a really positive experience. We just got a new apprentice folk builder over in Sweden, and his name's Anders, and he's doing really good things over there. We've got folks in Poland. We've got folks in Germany. We've got some in Czech Republic and Slovakia. We've got a number of people doing things in Europe. We have members in Italy. We've got people internationally now. That's really a nice thing.
Wouldn't that be great to plan a big meetup in Europe for all these different groups to come fly over there and meet in one central place and have a big celebration together?
I would love that. I think that'd be fantastic.
We should look into that. Maybe plan something like that. That would be fun.
Absolutely.
Kind of like a mecca trip, a yearly mecca trip. I think we need that. All these other groups have that and we've abandoned that.
Well, yeah, I'll tell you what, going over to Denmark a few years ago was very much like that for me. Got to see a lot of ancient burial mounds, got to go visit dolmens and things. We got to do rituals in stone circles that our ancestors have done ritual in since Bronze Age, at least, in most of these places we were at. It was really kind of special because it wasn't like, we weren't looking at history and observing something. We were participating in rituals that our ancestors would have understood and done something very, very similar back for thousands of years. And that was a really special experience.
Oh, very special. I wanted to ask you, what is the Austrian stance on good and evil?
Well, there's a lot of detractors out there that want to say our people don't have those. That's an Abrahamic thing. But what we have that's more similar to that is order versus chaos. Our gods are gods of order, and the chaotic forces, be it the Jotuns or any of these other forces of chaos, are things that try to destroy that order. Our gods, they're gods of order and consciousness, and their struggle is always to beat back chaos and stay one step ahead of it. One step ahead of the maw of the wolf. So That's kind of our things, and things that support order and support the structured order of society, things much like I mentioned in that post, are good things in Austria. And any things that are chaotic and want to tear that down, tear down society, tear down our people, Those are forces of chaos and destruction, and that's the stuff we have to fight against.
It's funny because that's the one thing that lefties really worry about. Even with Trump, they were freaking out about law and order, right? That really freaks them out. Right away, they start fearing fascism and Nazis, and they just want just total chaos all the time, it seems like.
Well, I think they thrive on that. I think especially if you're dysfunctional in your own life, and you're dysfunctional and you can't function in the society that's there, I think you're drawn towards chaotic things.
The other thing is too, good and evil, they're not really constants, right? What's good in one case may not be good in another. People are going to see that differently. I mean, people view us, what we're talking about right now, as evil.
Yeah, those people are mistaken. But yeah, I see exactly what you're saying. You know, our ancestors thought, you know, the great good was what was good for your people, what was good for your group, what was good for your tribe. And they saw it, you know, evil, for lack of a better term, and what was bad for your people, bad for your family, and bad for your tribe by extension. And that's how the AFA likes to view those kind of concepts as well.
Now, what about thoughts on the afterlife?
Well, that's an interesting subject. There's kind of a lot of different thoughts on our afterlife. And a lot of that varied from region to region in Europe. But the focus of the AFA has never been really that focus on the afterlife, because Ausatru is a life-embracing religion. We're not trying to wait for the glorious hereafter. We're trying to make things glorious in the world that we live in now. We're trying to celebrate life and live a good and noble life and be remembered by our families, by our friends, for noble words and noble deeds. And the afterlife will take care of itself.
Yeah, I think it's about owning your own destiny, making your life happen for yourself, not praying for someone else to do it for you or to open up the opportunities, but forging the path on your own.
It's about becoming the hero. That's something we've talked about within the AFA for a while now, is living that noble life and becoming the hero, doing those things for yourself, making those bold stands. You know, for what is known of our afterlife, heroic action was the surest way to that afterlife, be that in Valhalla or be that just in the songs and the stories of your folk.
Yeah, thinking in terms of politics today, it seems like the hero is being ripped down. You know, they might as well just raise up the court jester, right? The victim is the the highest, most noble thing you can be. Strong and mighty is looked at something like it's wrong, like you should be ashamed for being strong and mighty and wanting to own your destiny and be the best that you can be.
Absolutely. Those things have all been pilloried in the world that we live in. And that's something the AFA wants to really fight against. That is the antithesis of what we're about. We're all about the hero. And we're all about each of us becoming as close to that as we can be. It's easy to feel victimized or feel downtrodden by detractors and by different states of the world. But one thing we can always do is better ourselves. And that's what the AFA is all about making each one of our members, helping them to be better mentally, physically, spiritually, helping them to live a more noble life, have more pride in themselves, hold their head up high, and do great things. There's no downside to that. And that's the one thing that we all have control over, is ways to make our individual lives and people better. We can do that.
Absolutely. I agree 100%. And then when you guys come together as a whole, you're even stronger because everyone's managed to conquer things in their own life, right? Become the best that they can be. And that's exactly what we need in this interim. Instead of sitting around and playing victim and seeing what's happening out there, at least we can work on our own lives and get our own houses in order and start planning and being prepared for what's going to come ahead.
Absolutely. That coming together as a group and helping each other because we've been able to be strong ourselves, that's tremendous. There's nothing I'd like better than, you know, we're all human and we have times where we need help. There's nothing I would like more than to be surrounded by a group of strong people that have been able to fix the things in their lives to help me through it when there's something that I can't fix. And I'd love to be able to do that for my fellow people, for members of my tribe. That's something the AFA does try to do. We have a program called the Folk Services Program, to where when we have members of the AFA that go through hardships, go through, you know, natural disasters, things like that, we all step forward as a community and try to help those people out and get them through. And really proud of that. We've been able to be successful at that. So we're all about lifting ourselves up. And then by virtue of being able to do that, lifting each other up, helping each other out.
Yeah, I think white people have been so, especially in America, we've so been independent and on our own for so long that a lot of people are craving that brotherhood or sisterhood or community or having neighbors that they can just call up and say, hey, can you help me cut down this tree or whatever? A lot of us don't have that. Do we?
No, and we've lost that within, you know, within a generation or two. You know, in my grandparents' time, my grandparents knew their neighbors. Their neighbors knew them. We had communities. Unfortunately, where we live in today, that's far more scarce. And that's unfortunate. We've always been a people that was about the community and about our folk, about our tribe. So the AFA in a small way is trying to make that happen. We're seeing communities like that pop up throughout the world. It's really good to see.
Now, what are some ways that we can incorporate some of these ASA True tenets or ideas into our daily life?
Well, one thing, you know, there's a lot of debate whether it's a religion or a way of life, and it's both. Spirituality to our ancestors wasn't something you did, you know, every once in a while. You didn't go to church on Sunday. It was the way you lived your life. You should be ASA True with how you do your job at work. You should be ASA True with the kind of father you are, the kind of mother you are, the kind of husband you are, the kind of son or daughter you are. You should be ASA True in everything that you do and every way that you do things. If you have that noble ideal in front of you, you know, how would my ancestors be honored by what I'm doing now, or would they be ashamed of me for what I'm doing now? That's a powerful way to think, and it should affect every aspect of your life.
Yep. So how did our native ways or native spirituality die out in Europe? I know a lot of people say Christianity, but what are your thoughts?
Well, certainly that was a big part of it. I think inherently a lot of those values got passed on in different forms. You find that the Christian church, when it came to Europe, it drastically had to alter its way of doing things to conform to the mindset of our ancestors. You know, most of what we recognize as medieval Christianity came about by blending in a lot of our native folk ways in a way that our people would accept. So a lot of the traditions stayed on and kind of laid dormant for a while, and that's important. But yeah, Christianity stomped it out, but a lot of it was people giving up a faith that was theirs, that was their cultural identity they held on to, and trading it for a universal faith that didn't come from their people, that didn't represent, you know, the things that they needed in their soul. And over time, that just kind of eroded our people. And it's given us a lot of problems that we have today.
Well, thinking in terms of that, with some of those principles still kind of in Christianity, I know the Slavs, they had a dual faith for a couple hundred years, right? Side by side, two different faiths, and they kind of orthodoxy merged a lot of these pagan concepts. But do you think that the Abrahamic religions have done more harm than good?
Yeah, absolutely. In the long term, I think that you see European culture really affecting European Christianity and making it better than it otherwise would be for a while, and maintaining a lot of our virtues through various ways that the church did things. But yeah, over time, we would have been much better off if we would have been able to keep our ancestral faiths intact and develop them. And, you know, who knows how much better off we would be if we didn't have that stunted growth from this foreign creed.
Yeah, it's interesting. I see a lot of these hard Islamic people, they seem to be more concerned about paganism than Christianity. I don't know if you've noticed that, but they really just go nuts about European pagans more than Christians. Have you seen that?
I haven't seen a whole lot of that, honestly. That's interesting. I think maybe it's because paganism seems to be on the rise, whereas Christianity in this age that we live in has become weaker and weaker and weaker. It's really trailed off with the number of people that are active participants, and the values have just kind of eroded. You have a pope right now that doesn't stand for much of anything that the traditional church stood for, so it's kind of become unrecognizable.
So what do you think about the word heathen? A lot of people kind of fight on that. That's what the Christians said, and you know, it's kind of had bad associations. What about the word heathen to describe people?
That's a really good question. That comes up a lot, believe it or not, in our conversations. I tend to not like it, and the reason I tend to not like it is right now, most of the people that that ended up with their hateful attacks on us last week, they like to identify with the word heathen.
They sure do. Yeah, I've noticed that too.
So a lot of the things that they do, I try to keep my distance from as much as possible for obvious reasons. So that's my only issue with it. I know a lot of people, certainly people within the AFA and people that are good friends of mine, like to use it just fine. The only problem I have with it is it associates us with a group of people that I would kind of not like to be associated with.
Yeah, I think it's good to come up with new terms too. Why not?
Well, yeah, I noticed that their response to a lot of what we do is they don't want to use the term ousatru anymore now. They reject the term, which is fine. Cool.
Yeah.
It's ours. I'd like to own it. You guys can go figure out what you'd like to call it.
I wonder what their meetups are like. Do they sit around and talk about, you know, feminism and sexism and our evil white ancestors? I mean, how does that work with what they do? It's supposed to be a religion of your ancestors, and here they are, like, bashing their own people.
Yeah, I truly have no idea. I think that a lot of what they do is confined to the internet and various, you know, things that they can say from the safety and comfort of their or their parents' basements. I think that when you get those groups and they do get together, I think that they probably have a pretty fun Viking-themed barbecue. But I don't think that they have the same, in my experience and from what I hear, I don't think they have the same level of spirituality at their events. And I think they're really missing that connection. And I think that's probably what you face.
Maybe they're just heathen because it's anti-Christian, right? They hate Europe, and Europe they think is Christianity. So it's a way for them just to rebel against that.
I think that's interesting. There's an awful lot of rebellious strain, especially when somebody first is new to ousatru. They want to, you know, throw out anything that has any Christianity associated to it, and that could be the opposition between heathen and Christian could be a big thing.
A lot of people ask, well, how can the Norse myths help us? What can they teach us? What can you say?
Well, I think that they give us a unique window into a time of our people's development, and it gives you a window into the things that they valued. And the trick is being able to apply those things in a modern context. You know, very, very few of us get the opportunity to go get on our longboat and go raiding things. So figuring out ways to exhibit the courage of a warrior in your own life, that's a challenge. But I think that if you find ways to internalize those things, it does a lot. You know, a lot of those myths, once you have a historical context for them, really helps you to internalize the values, the way that our ancestors saw the divine, the way that our ancestors saw our interactions with the divine, and the way that our ancestors saw their interactions with other people and with nature.
So what else do you want people to know about ousatru as we come to the end here?
Well, I want you to know that ousatru, specifically practiced by the ousatru Folk Assembly, is a modern faith for modern people. We're not about dressing up like Vikings. We're not about pretending and finding how historically accurate we can LARP. What we're about doing is practicing the ancestral faith of our people back to the beginning of time and establishing that and practicing that in our modern world to meet our modern needs. It's absolutely a faith that has serious things that we talk about, serious things that we do that are relevant to modern families, modern people living in the world that we live in. It has relevant answers for people's lives and helping the betterment of ourselves individually and the betterment of our people.
And tell us what the AFA has coming up next.
Well, coming up next, as I said earlier, we've got Fall Fest up in Minnesota this weekend. And that should be really cool. That's the first time we've done that event. It's a part of the country we haven't had a national event in before, so I'm really excited to see what we've got going up there. We've also got Winter Nights in the Poconos coming up in October. And that's always one of our big events. That is perhaps our biggest event of the year. And it's always spectacular. That's coming up mid-October, and that's going to be really good. We're looking forward to that.
Right. Well, thank you so much, Matt. It's been a pleasure. I've really enjoyed this, and hopefully people are going to check it out. ousatrufolkassembly.org. You guys also have a good reading list there, correct?
We do. You'll find a lot of information on there. And, you know, if you read it, if it's something that you like, please feel free to join us, because we'd love to have you with us.
Thanks, Matt. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
There's nothing more grounded than being in tune with the Earth's natural cycles and honoring your ancestors. Pre-Christian seasonal celebrations are a way to rejuvenate yourself, step back from your busy modern life, and connect back with nature and your folk. I find when I get too busy and I'm on the computer too much, I crave being outside in nature, away from the noise, away from the artificial aspects of life. Much of it is unhealthy, and well, it kind of makes us crazy. As unpredictable as our lives and future might be, the one constant we can count on is seasonal cycles. Nature always does its thing. Without it, we'd all be dead. It's easy to get beaten down and fed up with the ongoing war on our folk.
That's why it's important to meet up with like-minded people as a way to find encouragement, inspiration, and new energy. The planet is constantly in a state of death and renewal, and so are we. I think it's important to take the time to be conscious of that process and where we are in that cycle. Balance is missing from so many of our lives. For some, it's too much work. For others, it's too much play. When one thing is out of whack, it can cause havoc and suffering in our lives. So come to an Also True meetup or honor the seasons and folk with your friends or privately, but take the time to do it. You'll notice a big difference in your life when you do. Whether we admit it or not, humans crave spirituality and need meditative, contemplative time, and they need to connect with those of their tribe. This is a basic human need. And like I said in the interview, children love celebrating pre-Christian traditions. It's the best way to anchor them into the ways of their folk and their ancient culture. Tune in this Saturday for another Weekend Warrior, where Henrik and I talk about the latest news and events from an alt-right perspective. RedIce.tv is the website, and if you'd like to help support us with a Red Ice membership and access all our material, including over 1,000-plus radio shows in our archives, go to redicemembers.com. We're also updating the design for that too, by the way. Much love. Have a productive week.